He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you. Hit us up on social media, all three platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Search 73rd Hole, and you will find us. Taylor, what a phenomenal weekend on the PGA Tour. The first of two events at Jack's Place, Muirfield Village Golf and Country Club in Dublin, Ohio. Obviously, the Memorial's played there every year. The John Deere became the Workday Charity Open this year, and the playoff between JT and Morikawa was fireworks. This should have been the July 4th tournament because fireworks were going off yesterday on 18 green in that playoff.
Boy, yeah, it was a shootout to say the least, you know, kind of like we were talking about before. It seemed like it was almost a two-horse race. Hovland kind of had a chance there. We added up. He was two over. He birdied three of his first five holes and then proceeded to play two over the rest of the way in. Yeah. So if he could have kept that momentum going a little bit, that would have had. But one of the things I think is underrated here going back looking on this, I mean, Thomas bogeyed two of the last three holes. And, yeah, you know, and I mean, he had that putt on 18 to, what was it, 10 feet or something like that. Down
Roughly 10 feet for the win.
Down the hill. So, I mean, it's not – and obviously he had eagled 15 before that and was five under through six holes on the back. So he's playing really good, but – faltered on those last three holes, and then Morikawa almost did what he did at Colonial and lipped out that two-footer for – God, could you imagine if that thing horseshoed back at him?
He would have had the yips for the rest of his career.
I mean, it seems like it was definitely in his head.
Oh, you know? It's definitely in his head. I mean, I don't even know if it was 2 feet.
Here, let me go. We'll go on.
Pull up the shot link because I want to know if it was even 2 feet. I don't think it was. I think it was inside 18 inches. And I mean, it barely – went down. You saw
two feet three inches.
Was it okay? 2 feet 3 inches.
So that will strap. I mean, that'll strap on any putt. I mean, you know, if you're playing with your buddies, that's inside the strap link.
Yes.
You know, I mean, normally you're kicking that back and saying, "Pick it up here."
Well, not only that, it was not a sidewinder. He was directly underneath the hole, putting straight uphill, dead straight putt. He just pulled it a little bit. Yeah. Luckily, it went down, or he really would have been kicking himself. But, yeah, so JT, I thought after he made the eagle on 15, the way he kind of casually walked it in and went about his business, there'd be no way to know this, but I think that he relaxed a little bit, and I think that he thought, okay, let's just get her in the clubhouse. Let's just not make a big mistake. Because on 16, what does he do? Back left pin, bails out right in the rough. Can't get up and down. What's he do on 18? He knows that creek's on the left. We can't be in the creek. Blows it way right. Hits the tree with a 3-wood. Kicks down in the bunker. Fats the bunker shot. Leaves it short of the green in a position that's essentially dead. I think that JT thought he had it won after the eagle. He was three up with three to play, and I think he went on cruise control a little bit the last three holes. Morikawa makes a phenomenal birdie on 17, and they end up in a playoff, and Morikawa ends up closing the deal. But I thought that JT took his foot off the gas. He played numbers 8 through 15 at, I believe, 7 under, and then he took his foot off the gas because I think he thought he had it won, and it ended up costing him. So I think big-time learning experience for JT, a guy who's won 12 times on tour. You can never learn enough on the PGA Tour, and I think that was evidenced yesterday by JT.
So Thomas had, what do you have, a 3-shot lead with three holes to go? Is that
three right? Up with three to play.
Three up with three to play. And going back on here, you know, we talk about the tour percentage, 50-50s around the 8-foot range. So he missed on, you brought up 16 where he bailed out right. He missed a 12-footer for par.
Really good missed putt. That. Didn't move. He played it to move back toward the water. I mean, he put it on the left lip, played it to move back toward the water, and it hit the left lip of the hole and didn't go down.
So he had a good putt, just didn't go in.
But I don't know how that one doesn't move toward the water, but the tee shot's where he made the mistake. So,
yeah, anyway. And then on next hole, he missed a 12.5-footer for birdie, and then on 18, like you just mentioned, 11-footer down the hill for par to win it. So if any of those putts inside of 12 feet go in the hole, you know, he wins anyway. So, you know, he had his opportunities to make it and to seal the deal, and kind of like you said, I think he make a really great point how he just kind of relaxed a little bit and wasn't you know, didn't necessarily focus and hone in as much as he probably should have, even though, you know, someone great like Morikawa right there with him, you would think that, you know, I mean, all he had to do was do one under. I guess Thomas in his head probably just didn't think he was going to bogey two of the last three holes.
Yeah.
Just because he was on such a roll, too, you know, like you said. Well, he was seven under through...
I think it was seven under from eight through 15, because we go back and look, let's see, he went birdie, 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 birdie at 8, 9, 10, 11. That's four. Birdied 14, that's five. Eagled 15. That's seven under in an eight-hole stretch for JT. And I really thought on 16 and on 18, his only thought on the tee on both those holes was don't hit it in the water, don't make a big number. Don't give the tournament away.
He was doing exactly what Steve Ball or just Johnson is thinking about outcome.
Yeah.
And he was, that seems like that's what he's doing. But he had a beautiful shot in there on 14. I remember seeing that hit it to about 5 feet. And that was
with Colin Morikawa in there 12, 14 feet for eagle after he hit a phenomenal tee shot after watching Hovland put it in the water.
Yeah, exactly. And then so he hit it really close on 11. The part, one of the reasons too I bring up these holes, I love the courses on a Muirfield.
It's so great.
I love it. It's so many of my favorite. I love 11, the par five. I love 14.
14 is, to me, whenever we think about short par fours in golf, I feel like we always default to 10 at Riviera, and I love 10 at Riviera, but man, I love 14 at Muirfield too.
I do, and it looked like it played 308. I think sometimes they can play it further back, so you see a lot of guys will, like Tiger always hits an iron. I don't think I've ever seen him hit a wood off that tee box.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen him chip in from over the back of that green on a Sunday.
Yeah, for par.
Did he in the water that year?
No, he was long, way long left and then flubbed it. Okay, short, and then hit another flop shot in. That's when he did the big fist pump, his first win in 99. Yeah, so going back to this tournament, I just think
also 12 is a great hole too.
Yeah, it's Jack designed it after Augusta. Yeah, so
even if you didn't know that, just watching the broadcast, you're like, hey, that looks familiar. It's basically a 10 to 15 yard longer number 12 at Augusta.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's got the bunker just short. The green runs at a left to right kind of long diagonal.
Yeah,
which
from
is
front left to back right.
Front left. Yeah, exactly. Which is for most right-handed players, you hit the push, it comes up short. You hit the pull, comes up long, which is what makes it, which makes those diagonal greens tough. You know, so for a lefty, it's a little easier. But nevertheless, you see a lot of great characteristics in the courses on this course. But going back to the actual play of it, I mean, I just think you hit the nail on the head. If Thomas could have just, like you said, if it was nerves, just a comfort factor, was it, you know, whatever it may be, did he feel like he got a bad break and didn't, you know, wasn't able to focus right? But I feel like Thomas gave it away at the end more than Morikawa wanted. You know, I mean, once you get into the playoff, it's a little different.
I don't think it ever happens without it being both. Because Morikawa's birdie on 17, I mean, the three-hole finishing stretch at Memorial, or at Muirfield Village, obviously this wasn't Memorial, is one of the toughest three-hole finishing stretches in golf. You know, 18 last year on tour played as the toughest finishing hole in the game of golf. And Morikawa played the final three holes one under, birdied the first playoff hole, and then went par-par over the next two. And even though JT was behind the tree and had to lay up, ended up making five, the second shot Morikawa hit on the third playoff hole into number 10, he steps up with an 8-iron to a pin that's just, you know, 10 paces or so over that bunker and stuffs it in there to 6 feet with his playing opponent in trouble.
Yeah.
That was some stones for Morikawa. No,
well, you're right, because you go back and look on the rank. Number 6 played as the hardest hole of the week, but number 18 played as the third hardest hole, number 17 played as the second hardest hole, and number 16 played as the fourth hardest hole.
Wow.
So, I mean, you hit the nail on the head there that those are hard finishing holes, but at the same time, Thomas, who was 7 under through 8 through 15, you know, you wouldn't expect... And also, he's a top five player in the world to bogey two of the last three holes, no matter how hard they are.
You know, no doubt, kind
of thing. But at the end of the day, Morikawa shot, what, 6 under on the last day. So, I mean, you shoot 6 under on Muirfield.
Final round 66 is...
I mean, that's solid. That's as good as you can get. And we kind of mentioned Hovland there a little bit. He had it rolling there. It was birdie 3 under through 5 and then 2 over on his last 13 holes. You know, for all the OSU fans around here, I'm sure they're rooting for him. And he got out there a little early, so it probably looked like he was kind of the front runner and had a really good chance to win and contend, and he just kind of faltered down the stretch, it looked like. From what I saw, maybe his what I was hearing on the broadcast when I was driving in, that he got a short game coach. I didn't see the official name of
it.
It's exactly, yeah.
He's outside the top 200 in strokes gained around the green. I thought it really showed yesterday. He actually had a nice chip in par on 12. And Taylor, I know we'll let our listeners know you were playing another tournament this week. So you've caught up on the tournament, but you weren't watching it live.
I was not watching it live, yeah. So I wasn't, like you said, when you're watching the 50-footer from JT going in the moment,
right,
and then Morikawa making on top of it, it's a little different than knowing after the fact of the excitement. But yes, exactly, you're right.
So anyway, Hovland on 12, he's just short of the green. I mean, he's got a very straightforward birdie chip. And then he had essentially the same very straightforward par chip because he just totally decelled and flubbed the first one, advanced it like 4 feet probably. And then he chipped in on the next one for par and ended up saving it. So 14, after he rinses it on 14, he had a great lie. Dottie talked about how great the lie was over there for Hovland. You know, a shot that if you want to win on the PGA Tour, you got to get that up and down and save your par on 14. He only had a little 20-yard pitch in there.
Yeah, it looked like he hit that chip to about 6 feet, 4 inches and then missed it.
Yeah, and so then missed it on the high side. Thought it would come back toward the water, and it didn't. But that's, you know, the way Dottie described that lie and even the camera view on the lie was good. I mean, that's shots that we're seeing other guys in the field hit to 3 feet. And we know the difference in percentage from 3 feet to 6 feet. It's 95% at 3 feet. And then what? At 6 feet, it's probably 65%, 60, something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Goes about 10% each different distance. And you look, I mean, you know, Thomas was able to get a big advantage because you're looking down the leaderboard. Hovland and Morikawa both parred 15, which ranks as the 14th hardest hole. So it was one of the easier holes of the week. And Morikawa and Hovland both parred it when Thomas was able to make about a 24-footer for eagle. So, I mean, that was kind of a big momentum shift there, well, even late in the round.
And again, because you weren't watching live, so Morikawa, he's in jail off the tee on that hole. He, for his third shot into 15, had like 185, and he was on the downslope in the rough. So, you know, 15 has that fairway that you lay up into.
Yeah.
He didn't get to that with his layup.
Yeah.
So he's on the downslope in that rough.
For anyone who's played, it's very similar to the 18th hole at Twin Hills in that aspect, where it dips down and then goes back up, where it's kind of that little rough ravine right there. So you got to get to the next fairway, and he wasn't able to do that still on the downslope.
So then he shortsides himself on the left. It doesn't get in the bunker, but he's got like a foot in the bunker, a foot out. The ball's like 4 inches out of the bunker. Short-sighted, hits a phenomenal pitch shot to like 4 feet and ends up making it to save his par.
Five feet.
Okay,
we'll get more credit.
Even more credit. Especially the way he putts. Of course, he might be better from 5 feet than he is from 4 feet.
He's definitely better from 25 feet than he is from 5 feet.
Yeah.
Or 2 feet, 3 inches.
Last thing we want is Morikawa standing over a 3-footer with the game on the line. But anyway, that was a phenomenal par save that at the time seemed like, okay, nice par. Gives you a nice cushion over third. That's what it seemed like at the time. And then, you know, that's why, man, it's the PGA Tour. You want to win on the PGA Tour? You better play 72 holes. 69 ain't enough.
Well, I mean, you look at it, obviously he hit that great shot in there to 12, hit it to 3 feet or whatever. Then
nearly aced 12.
Yeah, his iron game was on fire yesterday.
And then hit the flag stick, 12 landed probably 4 inches from the hole.
Yeah, and these aren't just little wedges either. These are, you know, mid irons. I mean, 7 iron or 8 iron, probably something like that. So he's throwing darts.
You know how many approach shots he hit to 10 feet or closer on Sunday in the 18-hole regulation?
Hit me with it.
Eight. Approach shots to 10 feet or closer.
So he had 8 birdie putts inside 10 feet.
It's disgusting.
Gosh dang it.
It's absolutely disgusting.
It's hard to beat someone. But you make a really good point, because I didn't really take that in consideration, that great up and down that he had on 15. Because, I mean, like you said, I can see it right here on the shot link. I didn't see this shot happen. But if you're left of that bunker, that's not an easy chip, because the green slopes away from you.
It looked dead.
And for him to be able to get that up and down, and I'm assuming he hit before Thomas made his putt, correct?
Yes.
I'm assuming. I mean,
he hit his fourth, but then Thomas made the 25-footer for eagle, and then Morikawa stepped up and jarred the 5-footer for par, which, as we learned, kept him in the tournament.
Yeah, but still kept him 3 down with 3 to play, and like I said, I mean, Morikawa, I mean, playing those last 3 holes 1 under, knowing how hard that they were, is good, but at the same time, Thomas a top five at worst player in the world, for him to miss those. Like I said, on 16, he put himself in a bad spot with the tee shot because he didn't want to go left. But having three consecutive putts inside 12 feet to not make at least one of those to secure the deal, I think is going to haunt him for a little bit. And obviously he made...
He's mad at himself after the round.
Of course. And we saw the huge 50-footer that he made. And so he, you know, obviously that would have made up for it if Morikawa had not made the...
And who thinks Morikawa is going to make the 25-footer on top? I know watching it live. So I bet Colin Morikawa on Wednesday at 33-1. He was one of my six guys that I put 10 bucks on. So that's 4 weeks in a row. I've had money on the winner. But I did hedge with JT and Hovland overnight Saturday into Sunday because I knew that somebody from that group was going to win. So I guaranteed myself, couldn't lose money, make a little bit with Thomas, medium amount with Hovland, and then Morikawa was the most. Ended up profiting, I think, 130 on the week. So I'm watching that, and JT makes the 50-footer, and I am beside myself that he just canned this 50-footer with 10 feet.
Because it was perfect putt, too.
It's Dude, it was unreal.
It's not like one of those that like goes, like hits the hole, pops up, and goes in. I mean, it was dead weight right in the center.
With 10 feet of break.
Yeah.
On a 50-footer downhill. He was on downhill.
18 at Muirfield. It's big sloping green. He was on the very back corner, and that pin was it very front corner or was it middle front?
It was kind of middle. It was kind of right center front.
Right. Oh, right. Okay.
On the front. So he had to come up over the ridge and then down the hill toward the front of the green. It was a phenomenal putt, but I mean, then I don't think Morikawa was going to make the next one. They always say, you know, assume your opponent's going to make it. I didn't think JT was going to make, and after he made, I damn sure didn't think Morikawa was going to make. For him to step up and make it was big time. So JT, after the round, he said, it's completely unacceptable. I'm upset. I'm disappointed. But at the end of the day, it's over with now, and I just need to take some time to build on it and figure out what I can do better. A lot's going to be made about the two over in the last three for JT, but whenever you look at his round, it was really kind of a sandwich. He had that seven under stretch and eight holes in the middle, and it was sandwiched by two bogeys to start and two bogeys to finish. So there are a lot of lessons to be learned from JT here. One, he came out flat-footed. He was two over through seven. And luckily, he didn't shoot himself out of the tournament, but he was two over through seven. And then he makes five birdies and an eagle in his next eight holes, and then plays the last three two over. That's a great middle of your round, but he came out flat-footed. He finished flat-footed. And after no bogeys for the first 54 holes, no bogeys for the first 55 holes, I guess, then he goes back-to-back bogeys at two and three, a couple late in the round. So a tough finish there for JT.
Was it a two-shot lead he had going into Sunday?
Right? Yes, he had a two-shot lead over Hovland and three over Morikawa. Because Morikawa, who played a poor round on Saturday, actually jarred about a 25-footer for birdie on 18 on Saturday, which allowed him to get back to even par and only three behind JT, which I thought was important for Morikawa to have that confidence coming in. And obviously it was because he played the first five, four under on Sunday, and could have been better. Like I said, he nearly aced number four, and he nearly aced number 12 as well.
And that approach shot he had into five, that par five, was just freaking phenomenal. 230 yards out.
How far was that? Do you have the putt?
Yeah, 230 out, hit it to 3 feet, 1 inch.
Yeah, 3 feet, 1 inch.
Front pin with that water short left too, and not a whole lot of bailout room. You can miss out to the right, but then even then, that's just almost impossible.
Such a great course.
I mean, it is phenomenal course, and we'll get more into it after our break coming up. But I'm excited to see because I've heard some things. You know, they're not gonna mow the rough, and they're gonna get the greens rolling a little faster for this upcoming week.
And they were fast. I thought this week.
Yeah, exactly. I believe from what I saw, they're rolling around 11 and a half.
11 and a half is what Dottie was saying all week.
And so I think next week they're gonna try to get them up to about a 13 or so. Which
Dottie said in her notes that last year they had them rolling a 13 for the Memorial.
Yeah.
So about a foot and a half faster, which is pretty significant.
Oh, yeah. And one thing that my dad pointed out to me, which I think is a good point that you don't really think about, you know, because you're like, well, these guys that play the course before, you know, the week before, you're thinking, oh, they'll have a big advantage knowing on the course. Well, all of a sudden, you play the same course and you change the green speed by that much. You know, are these guys who played well, are they going to be used to that?
It's a good question. It changes how the ball rolls off the ridges.
It changes the brakes.
It changes the brakes. It
changes the chips. I mean, it changes how... you don't have a whole lot of short wedge shots because it's a long course, but even the short wedges that you have are going to spin and release differently.
Well, Bryce don't have a bunch of wedge shots.
That's a good point. That's good. If
they're not mowing the rough between yesterday and the Memorial, Bryson better be careful.
That's some thick stuff.
He better be careful because it was already getting thick. And I know he's a strong dude, can dig it out of the rough, but if they're not mowing it between now and Thursday, be careful bombing and gouging. Yeah. You need to hit a couple fairways along the way.
That'll be something to watch, and we'll get into that in our preview show for sure. But, yeah, just to make a note on that, yeah, that'll be interesting to see how Bryson does because these courses that he's played where he's done well at, obviously, Harbortown is more of a position course, but even Colonial and Rocket Mortgage where he won at, you know, those, the rough, it wasn't very long there. So he's able to take it over the corners. And even if he's in the rough, he's able to control the spin out of it and able to get it somewhat close to the hole. Well, all of a sudden you have this 4-inch hay, thick hay going out there. He's not going to, he might not be able to hit it as close. So yes, I think it will be interesting, not only to see how he plays, but his course strategy to see if he's still willing to bomb and gouge it out there with some slightly narrower fairways and also with some heavier rough.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's Taylor Williams. I'm Colby Powell. We need to take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side, continue to recap the Workday Charity Open at Muirfield Village Golf Club. We're going to recap all of our picks, how those did, how we did in our one and done pools, betting, things of that nature. We'll give you the biggest performers and the biggest disappointments from this week at the Workday Charity Open. All that, we'll wrap things up here on a Monday. Stay with us on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
We're back here on the 73rd hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you. Find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Search 73rd hole. Like, follow those pages wherever you find us. And take a couple minutes, rate and subscribe this podcast wherever you are listening. It's an exciting week. Very exciting week in the game of golf. It's what I'm calling the official return to action for the PGA Tour after the layover, because big cat's in the field this week.
How excited were we on, was it Thursday when the announcement came out?
God.
I mean, I was.
I might have ran a lap around the house.
And it was, we had talked about it where it was, we expected him to play, but we just had that deep down fear of if he didn't.
But you got to get the commit, though.
The commit. And the commit came, got it, super excited. Can't wait to see him out there. This is going to be one of the few experiences. I remember one time a few years ago, back when Tiger had his tournament at Congressional, there was a big rainstorm that knocked a lot of trees down, so they didn't have fans out there that day. But besides that, I think maybe one other time, but I can't remember the exact situation. This is going to be one of the very few times that Tiger's played a competitive golf without fans there.
It's going to be wild. You know, a lot of people who played with Tiger over the years have said that it's like a two-shot penalty playing with him because the fans are so crazy.
Or in front of him, too.
Or in front of him, yeah, because the fans are moving around like crazy. Whenever we had Taylor Gooch on, he said out at where was it?
Riviera, one of the two.
He was in front of Tiger, and he's like, "Dude, there's just people everywhere." He actually said on a par three, they had to wait to tee off because people were inside the ropes on the fringe, and they didn't know if they were supposed to hit. And so, it'll be great to have Tiger back this week. I want to ask you. So, I thought that yesterday for me, you know, all season last week, I said, "Screw the fans, we don't need them. Let's play golf." Yesterday was the first time that I really wished there would have been fans gathered around 18, because when JT made the bomb and then Morikawa topped it, that is a tailor-made moment for the crowd to go crazy, the player to go crazy. And JT went crazy. He yelled. And I love the reaction from JT, that raw emotion. And then Morikawa, I think, was kind of relief that he made his and was extending the playoff. But yesterday was the first time I really missed the fans.
Yeah, and it would have been interesting to see if having fans there would have changed the dynamics of it at all, you know, because if Thomas makes that eagle putt on 15, then there's a loud roar, you know, then maybe all of a sudden Morikawa doesn't get it up and down because there's crowd rumbling or whatever it may be.
So or even on 18, or even in the playoff.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
Morikawa makes the putt on top of him, if JT makes the bomb and then the crowd's going crazy and Morikawa's having to wait for the murmur to kind of settle, is he as comfortable standing over the... You never know.
And so. When I was listening in, I believe it was a CBS show, Mark Emmerman, Mark Immelman was on, and one thing that he thought was interesting was that he was up following the Chase Seifert group that was ahead of Thomas and Morikawa, and he had mentioned that even with no fans out there, there was still energy that was going through the course. And you could tell how the momentum was going and all that. And with us not being there, the fans, we can't really tell that, but for someone who was inside the ropes, said that you could feel the momentum shifting when it did and all that. But at the same time, I think you're right, Colby. You know, if there was fans there, it could have changed the dynamic of it, but also too, it would have, it just would have been an epic roars all over the place.
I mean, 50 footers in playoffs, that doesn't just happen.
No, you don't see,
we'll
that.
See that every day.
Well, not only 50 footer in a playoff, but Thomas is top 5 player in the world, and Morikawa is well on his way.
He's 13th in the world now.
He has
one spot ahead of Tiger.
He has more wins than he has missed cuts on the tour.
Yeah, by the
and
way,
he's been out there for a year.
You ready? I'm sure you saw it. The ridiculous Tiger stat that's been floating around since yesterday.
Which one? Let me hear.
So, Colin Morikawa now has more wins than missed cuts on the PGA Tour since turning professional. Morikawa is the first player since Tiger Woods in 1996 to win his second PGA Tour title before missing his second cut as a pro. And a little trivia for you. How many PGA Tour wins did Tiger have before he missed his second cut as a PGA Tour pro?
As a Tour pro. Ooh, boy.
How many Tour wins did he have?
Ooh, that's tough, because even back in 98, I don't think he missed two cuts. He may have, but I don't think he did. God, I mean, if he did, it's going to be incredible, because surely a second missed cut wasn't in 2005 or 2004, whenever it was at the Byron Nelson. Gosh dang it, that's a tough one.
The fact that you know when his second missed cut was is impressive. His second missed cut was the 2005 Byron Nelson.
So that was his second one.
That was his second missed cut as a Tour
when
pro.
When was his first missed cut?
His first missed cut was in...
was in 98? It's probably 98 if I had
probably
to
98?
Because even in 96 when he came out...
I think he missed
out,
one cut in 98.
Yeah, here, I'll...
just off memory.
I'll look it up when we go into it, because it won't take long to find. All we have to do is go back to the world rankings and find Tiger and go back to those years, because... But yeah, I knew that's when the cut streak ended was at the Byron Nelson, because Byron Nelson was the person...
142 straight events?
Something like that. Yeah. But... you know, you can have this debate all you want, because it's both sides of the coin, because Nelson had it beforehand, but he's playing in such smaller fields, and a lot of his things are too like team events. You know, you're playing
events.
A team with a
just like Sam Snead when Tiger was chasing Sam Snead. It's like, well, I think 5 of Sam Snead's wins came in two-man team events.
Correct. And one thing, too, that is people will criticize about the Tiger thing, and not a lot of people do, but the Tiger haters will, is that, well, he had so many events like the World Golf Championships and the Tour Championship where there is no cut, but it counts towards a made cut, you know? And so it's like, you know.
Out of those 142, probably 10 of those.
Maybe 15.
Yeah,
a few more than that. But at the same time, that's kind of the arguments you'll get from that debate. But yeah, that's...
It's not like he was just making the cut at the WGCs. He was winning the events. I hate Tiger haters. They just look for reasons. He was winning the events. He's won more WGCs than anyone ever. He's won more WGCs than 99% of players will win in a career.
So, yeah. So, in 98, he did not miss a cut, actually. His worst, he withdrew from the Pebble Beach, which used to be in the middle of the season. What in the world? That happened after the Open. The AT&T used to be after the Open Championship and before the PGA.
That's nonsense.
In 98.
Did they move it in 2000 because of the U.S. Open?
And then they
left it there?
Well, let's see if we have it on here. Nope, because it's in February in 99. It's one of the first ones. So
That's really odd.
Did not miss a cut in 99 either, so it had to have been in 97.
97, maybe even 96 when he first came out.
97 Bell Canadian Open.
So he went from 97 Bell Canadian Open to 2005 Byron Nelson without missing a cut. So Tiger had won, Taylor, 43 times.
Holy
smokes. As a professional before he missed his second cut. I love everything about Colin Morikawa. I seriously doubt he's going to get to 43 before he misses another cut.
I would put any amount of money on the fact that that's not happening. So, yeah, even going back, so Tiger turned pro at the Milwaukee Open in 96. He finished 60th there. He actually made, a lot of people don't know this, he made a hole-in-one in his very first tour event. So that was pretty cool. But before that, he had missed two cuts before he turned pro. But after that, like you said, I didn't realize that his first missed cut was at the Bell Canadian. Not only that, that was at the end of 97. So he went over a full calendar year without missing a cut, starting out being a pro.
Yeah, he made 25 straight cuts as a pro.
Yeah.
To start his career. We know Morikawa was chasing that before he did us all a favor and missed the cut at the Travelers.
By
good
a lot.
For him. By the way, Morikawa in his career, after a missed cut, has won 100% of the times he tees it up.
That is a good sign. So next time when he does miss the cut, we got to lay the coin on him.
That's what I did. And it worked out for him. Week off. More college.
Man, I know you're a pretty modest guy, but you got to give yourself a little credit on these picks these last few weeks, man. You're racking up the cash.
Look, I'm betting six guys a week, so obviously I'm increasing my chances there.
But 144 players in the field. Minimum. Well,
and of those, 50 can't win, but the field's wide open to a ton of guys, especially at the Rocket Mortgage in a weak field. This field was good, but it wasn't, 700 strength of field, I wouldn't imagine. It was probably around 500 if I had to guess. I'm feeling pretty good about my betting. I did hedge with Thomas and Hovland just because I knew the winner would come out of that group.
This was a 498 right at 500. Okay, I mean, this is less than like the Bay Hills and all that, but still a little bit more than like the Tories and that kind of thing. So it was still comparatively a upper echelon tournament. Wouldn't have been obviously without the Corona and all that stuff, but still a good field. But at the same time, you're exactly right. There's a few players who, and there's so many great players out there, even like the Mark Emmons, Chase Seifert, he got himself up in the Corn Ferry rankings, got him a little bit more status there. And so, we think about these guys that can't win. Even a few weeks ago, Will Gordon missed the cut after, when we thought we'd pick him, but the week before finishing solo third. I mean, there's just so many guys out there that can contend and win, just even if they get a shot. And so for you to have winners 4 weeks in a row, the odds are very slim of that happening.
I want to give Chase Seifert a lot of credit. So for those of you who think that it's easy for these guys who are elite amateurs to go on and be PGA Tour pros, Chase Seifert in 2020 is a rookie on the PGA Tour. In 2012, when he was at Florida State, he was one of the hottest amateurs in the country in 2012. He won the Florida AM. He won, the Florida Match Play. He won a couple other of, big time amateur events. Yeah. I mean, this dude was a hot commodity coming out of Florida State. He was on the Florida State team with Daniel Berger and Brooks Koepka. Mm-hmm. I mean, that team was loaded. And it's taking him to 2020 to be a PGA Tour rookie 8 years later. I mean, the grind.
That's an investment.
You go to
8 years of university to become a doctor.
Yes.
A little more than that now, but so, the point's still the same. Yeah.
Again, we see Morikawa and Hovland in the final group yesterday. That's the exception, not the rule. The rule is guys like Chase Seifert who have to grind it out for a decade to find themselves on the PGA Tour. I want to remind everybody, by the way, and then I'm going to give you a ridiculous ball striking stat for this week at Muirfield Village. I want to remind everybody to get down to Bushwood in Chickasha and remember to call and make your tee time. 224-1250. 405-224-1250. If you remember the Bushwood of old, a few years back, and you're thinking, I need a tee time at Bushwood, absolutely you do. My dad ran over.
It's been packed lately.
Yeah, my dad ran over. He tested at 9:30 yesterday morning. He was gonna get a quick nine in. He said the course was packed. He didn't have a tee time, so he had to go home. But it's not the same Bushwood you remember. Course is in good shape. There's people everywhere. People are having fun. Friendly environment. Go down. You're gonna have a lot of fun at Bushwood. So go down, see Max and the crew at Bushwood. Tell them 73rd hole sent you. We appreciate Max and everybody down there in Chickasha. So you ready for this ridiculous stat from yesterday?
Yes, so, I am.
Jack Nicklaus has always said that Muirfield's a second shot golf course, right? That's what it's supposed to be. So we had some ball strikers in the final group yesterday with JT Morikawa and Hovland. So the last two seasons, we're looking at strokes gained approach. 1, 2, and 3 on the list in strokes gained approach over the last two seasons on the PGA Tour. Morikawa was 1 in strokes gained approach. Thomas is 2. Hovland is 3. They now, finished 1, 2, 3 on the leaderboard.
Strokes gained approach to green?
Strokes gained approach.
Yep. So this is iron play.
Yeah, this is iron play.
This is iron play. Awesome. Yeah.
And Jack says second shot golf course, and I thought it was phenomenal that the top three in the last 2 years in strokes gained approach to the green finished 1, 2, 3 in the same order that they set the last 2 years in strokes gained approaching the green. That's how they finished 1, 2, 3 in the tournament. That is a crazy stat.
Phenomenal. Well, and I think one thing crazy about that too is, we mentioned the young guns out here. We throw Wolf into the group of the Morikawa and Hovland now.
Finished runner up last week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he's up there. So, and I mean, you look at it, two of the best three are guys that are 20, what is the oldest, 22 years old out of those?
23
two?
Maybe.
20. I mean,
yeah,
even
Morikawa 23 maybe.
Yeah. I don't even think he's that old. I mean, we can look it up.
Yeah, might be 21. I don't really know. But
yeah, but nevertheless, I think that's an interesting point that you make. Obviously,
he is 23. Turned 23 in February.
Ah, yeah. So he's old enough to drink, so that's good. And yeah. And what's Hovland's age? You got Hovland's age there?
Hovland is 22 years old. He'll be 23 in September, so it's coming up. And then Matthew Wolf. Let's just go ahead and round out this trio. Matthew Wolf just turned 21 in April, so that's how we can always remember.
So Wolf is kind of the young. He's even a little younger than these young guys.
Wolf's a year younger than Hovland. Hovland's a year younger than Morikawa. And I think that we see that played out a little bit in the maturity of Morikawa's game and his ability to learn from losing the playoff against Berger and then bounce back. Just 4 or 5 weeks later at Muirfield Village, he learned something from that. He put it back in play. The ball striking was unbelievable. I think the best tweet I saw yesterday, somebody said, watching Colin Morikawa hit irons makes me want to take up tennis. No. Because you can't do it as well as he does.
It's so pure.
Yeah. Every time. Yard fake.
All you can do is strive to be the best. And when you're looking... obviously, anytime you want to work with your swing, you're trying to find a swing that works, you want to try to find someone who has the same type of body type as you do. But no matter what you look like, you just watch Morikawa's swing, his tempo, his fluidness, the way he keeps his spine angle, everything is just – it's just a perfect swing. And it's really hard. I don't see how he hits very many shots offline. Obviously, he plays a fade, so there may be the occasional time where he has that right miss. But really, other than that, I mean, he's just got a swing that doesn't break down. And if he's able to, you know, get down and – make those clutch putts like he wasn't able to do at Colonial and almost didn't do on the 2 foot 3-incher yesterday on the 72nd hole, but able to make that 25 footer in the playoff, I think is going to give him the extra confidence that he needs to kind of get this ball rolling even more, because even though he did have a win before, it was I'm forgetting the term.
Opposite field event.
Yes, absolutely.
Which not to take anything away from that, but this win is what vaults him into, you know, serious one of the best player in the world status. And this win also vaults him a notch above Wolf and Hovland, because I think that those three were all kind of together. And I think Morikawa has separated himself a little bit, even though Wolf finished solo second last week. Hovland's made all five cuts, finished solo third this week. I think it still separates Morikawa for him to have gone out and stared down Justin Thomas the way he did.
And here's a comparison for you, right? So we mentioned this field strength was a 496. What do you think the Barracuda Championship strength of field was?
Oh, probably in the hundreds.
26.
26?
26.
Woo! 26.
So
that's impressive.
It goes to show you, though, but it's the opposite field event. But if I remember right, it's the opposite of – it's either the Open or the WGC that's the week before. I can't remember which one it is. But nevertheless –
Barracuda. I think it's the WGC, because I think the opposite field for the Open is always the Barracuda.
Yeah, well, that's what he won, was the Barracuda.
No, I meant the Barbados.
Well, this was July 28th was when he won last year, so that would have been at the WGC.
When they were in Memphis.
In Memphis, yeah. So that just goes to show right there the difference between winning a 26 strength of field event as opposed to a 496 event. I mean, even when Paul Azinger made his comments, we went back and the guy from Finland that won, gosh dang, I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head, but when he won his event at the European Tour, that strength of field was still in the 70s. So the Barracuda was so much less than that. And so for him to, while he did have a PGA Tour win, it's not, you know, most European Tour events have a better field world ranking wise officially than the Barracuda did. So
because by very definition, an opposite field event is all the guys who couldn't get into the big event.
Correct.
So if we're looking, I wanted to pull up the leaderboard and just take a look at the top 10 because I was curious. So Morikawa, whenever he won the Barracuda Championship in 2019, second place, Troy Merritt. T3rd, John Chen and Robert Streb, Bronson Burgoon, Tom Hogue, Charlie Danielson in the top 10, Martin Laird, Roger Sloan. So a couple guys that you've heard of.
Heard of, and obviously really good players, but they're not the Thomases, the Hovlands. Here, Woodland finished 5th, Poulter 5th, Cantlay, your one and done pick who I almost picked 7th, Horschel 7th, Jason Day, who's been so off and on but still a huge name, finished 7th, Schauffele, who I like, finished 14th.
Yeah, just compare the two leaderboards.
Yeah,
it's not a comparison.
It's not a comparison. And also, scrolling down here, Taylor Gooch, who had missed a few cuts.
Friend of the show?
Yeah, friend of the show. Got T17, so great finish there.
Yeah, playing well. He needed that. He needed the bounce back week, and now he gets to play Muirfield
again. We knew it was coming. It was a matter of when.
Well, and you know, Jack talks about this being a second shot golf course. We always talk about how great of an iron player Taylor Gooch is.
Exactly.
So it was a good setup for him.
And so
I think
for our preview show, that'll be something that I think you and me will both look into is those approach shots, because also too, when they get these greens rolling faster, getting closer to the hole will be a little bit more of importance.
And getting in the right spot on the green.
Yeah, being uphill and not downhill, you're right. Because while while not just tour pros, almost everyone makes more putts on faster greens. At the same time, they break a lot more, and they're like you just mentioned, if you're on the wrong side of the hole, you might not, if you have a downhill putt that's long, you might not be able to keep it within 4 or 5 feet of the hole at greens that are rolling at a 13.
Then you got
to
make your comebacker, and puts a lot of stress on your game all day, and that's just not what you want.
And we mentioned this earlier, like with Hovland, it's chipping's a lot harder too, like
absolutely.
Especially if they keep the if they let the rough grow more and the greens are faster,
and you short side yourself.
Yeah, chipping is not going to be fun this week.
Yeah, and that so up and down Morikawa had on 15. That's going to get a lot tougher.
Yes, it is. Yeah, definitely. And so that'll be something to look forward to. I mentioned last week on our preview show how different maybe like the pin positions would be, because there's only so many you can have. And whenever you get these faster greens like this, that eliminates some of the pins that you can put.
Yeah, especially I'm really on these curious slope greens. On course setup. I actually kind of, when this first happened, I was like, why didn't we go to Akron? Why didn't we go to Ohio State?
Well, but we wanted
now that we're in it, I'm like, okay, this is kind of cool. I want to see how they're going to set it up week two. I'm like, I'm giddy to see.
Because we've never seen, besides from when they had, I believe they had the 2014 U.S. Open at Pinehurst, and they had the Women's U.S. Open the next week, or is vice versa, one or the other. But other than that, and those are two different tours, we've never seen anything like this.
So we have seen something like this on the PGA Tour. I actually did not watch these events when they were played back-to-back, because it was in 1957. Shout out to Justin Ray for doing the research here. 1957, I don't see the course. It was some course in Illinois. They had consecutive PGA Tour events at the same course. Hadn't happened since 1957. So what is that, 63 years?
Yeah, something that's like that.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, so it is. Yeah, so it has happened, but, you know, circumstances and all that, obviously this wouldn't have happened without the corona and all that. But I think you're exactly right, Colby. The fascination of how they'll change the course. And also, too, like my dad mentioned to me, how these players who play good this week, if the faster greens and the longer rough will you know, mix up their minds and all, because the guys who putted well this week, all of a sudden those greens roll 1.5 more on a stimp meter. Breaks are all different, lines are all different, so you might have a similar putt that you had this last week, and you see the line perfect, and all of a sudden that baby just either goes right through the break, or, you know, because you're on more of a slope, it just swipes under, and you're like, what the hell just happened? And
yeah, I've got a guy who was, let me pull the leaderboard up here. He was he was in the top 10 at this week's event, and I'm giving you a heavy fade on him next week. You got to listen Wednesday, though, if you want to know who it is. You got to listen Wednesday, the preview show, if you want to know who my heavy fade is on a guy that was in the top 10 this week. Why don't we recap some of our picks? So in our one-and-done show on the podcast, I ran with Hideki. Looked really good, 9-under through two rounds. Totally blew up on the weekend. By the way, do you know, do you have any idea? Look, you kind of know when you pick Hideki that you might have to deal with some putting woes. You know who led the field in greens and reg this week?
It was not Hideki, was it?
Oh, yeah, it was.
Oh, my Lord. Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah, it was. Didn't finish inside the top 20, but he led the field in greens and regulation.
So he went 72-73 on the weekend. One over.
And scoring conditions on Sunday were prime.
No, and I mean, that was so... Yeah, you mentioned it. So on the first round, Hideki hit 89% of the greens, hit 95%. So I'd have to do that's either one or two missed, one missed. And then 72% on the week on Saturday, then only 61% on the last round. So he ended up leading it, but you see definitely there that his it keeps going down every single week, or every single round, I'm sorry. And the first,
so basically when he hit 90% of greens the first two rounds, he should have been better than 9-under. He should have been closer to where Colin Morikawa was at 13.
So for Hideki, his strokes gained the first round, he gained 1.8. Last round, or second round, lost just a little less than...
Putting or...
Putting, yes. Putting, okay, putting, yeah. Putting, yes, sorry. Then third round, lost 2.1 on the greens. And then on Sunday, he lost 1.9. on the greens.
So he lost four shots on the weekend on the greens. And it felt like more than that. Every time they showed him, he'd have a left or right with like 2 inches of break, and he'd miss it by a cup. I mean, he'd misread it by a cup, or pull it or push it by a cup. It was tough to watch. So despite leading the field in greens and reg, he only gets me 60K. But that that advances my lead by 60K, because you had Justin Rose, who missed the cut by a hair.
Well, just a hair. Just a smidge.
A guy with phenomenal course history. Goes out and fires a little 74-80.
I saw the first round, and I was like, I even if he makes a cut, it's going to be bottom of the barrel. And, you know, we mentioned last week how the purse this week was a lot smaller. So even someone like the other guy I was picking, Cantlay, who finished T7th, just made over 100K.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was like 170 for Cantlay, yeah, if I remember right, because I had him in the big one had done.
I think it might have been 130, but nevertheless, the point's the same that okay, a really here, high see. A high finish.
T7, Cantlay, Jason Day, Russell Henley, Charlie Hoffman, Billy Horschel, Sam Ryder, and Kevin Streelman each netted 169,000.
Oh, so you were right.
What? 169,392.
Hey, 169. That's a good number. But yeah. So nevertheless, if you get a T7 next week, you're gonna get 250 probably. You know,
yes.
if it was all the same. So my point being was that I was debating between Rose and Cantlay. I'll probably end up using Cantlay this week. I could obviously change. You have to wait till Wednesday to hear my pick. But my picks hadn't been so well. But it's kind of like Morikawa. Even, you know, he missed that, had that stretch, faltered at Colonial, hadn't played very well since then. All of a sudden comes out and wins this son of a buck. So I think that's what we're going to be, or at least what I'm going to be with my picks on Wednesday coming up.
Yeah, I mean, that was your first missed cut in our podcast one and done. I've got two missed cuts, but I've also got a winner. It's all about picking winners.
It is.
Because winners get you so much money. You got to pick winners occasionally. So I had Hideki, you had Rose. Big one and done pool that we do season long. I had Cantlay. Who'd you take in the big one?
He did not finish DFL because Chase Koepka was in the field. I picked Joel Damon.
Oh, God.
I was the only one in our pool to pick Joel Damon. I thought
he was a hot commodity. Like, all my expert previews I read last week, quote-unquote expert previews, had Joel Damon as a guy to watch.
And I was we went over it. He had finished in the top 35 almost every event since he came back. So I'm thinking, you know, this is a solid guy, a purse that's kind of small. I don't want to run out a huge name to, you know, potentially win or lose just because, you know, like Thomas and Morikawa were up there, and Thomas wasn't a guy that I'm going to use in the one and done here at a purse that's 1.1 million or whatever, right. You know, so, or the winner would get 1.1, I'm sorry. But nevertheless, Joel Damon averaged 80 for his two round shot, 79-81. Just not nothing to bring home to mama. And obviously my other pick was Rose, who had phenomenal course history here and ended up missing the cut by a million shots.
Yep.
So it just goes to show, and I mean, we can even scroll down, and we're continuing to see this trend I've noticed in the first few events. I mean, there's some big names that are missing cuts. I mean, I'll just scroll down the names.
It shows how hard it is to put a cut streak together.
It is, and that, even more credit to Tiger and like Morikawa who did it. So, I mean, we'll just go through the list of names. It's some of the bigger names that you recognize.
Some of the bigger disappointments from this past week.
So, Snedeker missed the cut by one. Koepka missed the cut by one.
Did you see how he did it, too?
I did not.
So Koepka played his last seven holes 5 under on Friday, made like a 40-footer with a huge snapping break on 18, and at the time, the cut was one.
Oh, no.
After his round, after he did all that work, the cut moved to two, and he missed the cut.
Yeah, because there was only 67 players that made the cut, so 65.
It was teetering big time.
Yeah, it was right there.
It was like,
there.
The cut's two. I was watching Friday afternoon. I was like, oh, is Koepka going to make it? And he didn't after he put in all that hard work.
No,
so anyway, bigger disappointments.
Yeah, so yeah, even a guy that you've liked the last couple weeks, Scottie Scheffler missed the cut again. Spieth missed the cut again. Like, we're kind of steering away from him until he gets on courses that he really likes. He's not going to particularly do well. He just still hasn't found it yet. And even, you know, scrolling down,
Charles Howell III.
Charles Howell III missed a cut. A guy I like, a guy who had good course history here, Jamie Lovemark. A couple other guys I liked, McNeely and Varner missed a cut. Another guy who had really good course history here, Mark Leishman, missed a cut, shot plus five.
Yeah.
Wolf, who you mentioned, finished runner up last week, missed the cut. Plus five, and I mean, I tell you, and Bubba missed a cut, shot plus eight, who hasn't been playing worth a damn here lately.
I was going to say, Bubba's a cut missing machine.
Boy, he has not been playing well at all. And man, I tell you, someone who may not be out there a whole much longer is Bo Hostler. He missed the cut again, and he's been struggling bad. I don't know what's going on with there, but it seems like every time I look at him, he's down there at the leaderboard. The break was not good for him. So I mean, you know, we mentioned off there was a lot of good names in this field, and even some good names, you know, missed the cut pretty good. And even a guy a lot of people like, Cameron Champ, he made the cut, but he finished DFL because he shot 75-78 on the weekend.
Yeah, made the cut on the number and then just totally went away. So
it's just such – and then even Sun JM, I'm seeing here, I didn't even realize he's playing. He finished 63rd, so he had shot 77 on Sunday.
He has not regained his form from pre-break.
No, he has not. So this is – and this is something, like I said, we're continuing to see just with these kind of bigger fields and stackness, even Rahm had to shoot 64 on Sunday to get up in the top 27. So, I mean, these, it's just such an up and down fickle game. You have someone like Cypher, he's someone who I hadn't even seen play golf in forever. Stuart Sink finished T17. And then other guys up here like Sam Ryder, who had been playing fairly well, but not too bad. Charlie Hoffman had a good week. Russell Henley hadn't heard a whole lot of, played well again. So, I mean, and then obviously Cypher, like we mentioned earlier. So you're seeing guys who we think that are going to play well, who just have not even just mediocre weeks, horrible weeks. And then we have guys who come out of the woodwork and goes up, and that just shows how many good players there are out there.
Just
who
shows
are,
the depth of golf.
And go, we mentioned earlier about the Byron Nelson record and all that stuff. I mean, there's 144 players again in this field, but even we'll go back, and even on the Corn Fair, I want to shout out Taylor Moore. He finished, I believe, T16 down at San Antonio, so that was a really good finish. And then he'll be playing next week at the Oaks course, which is where they traditionally have the Valero Texas Open at, which I think is a course that'll set up very good for his game. So he was able to get a little bit of form back after having a not-so-stellar week the week before, so really good for him. But the reason I'm bringing all that up is that, you know, we saw Christoph Ventura finish top, what was it, 15 or something last week in the workday?
Yeah, top 20, something like that. Yeah,
and then he finished top five in the web, or he was at least up there. I didn't see exactly where he finished.
But I think he finished just outside the top 10. I don't have it in front of me, but decent week.
My point being is that, okay, so that even makes my point even more. So he finishes top 10 out of there, and he finishes roughly the same as he did in the PGA Tour event. So, I mean, this, there's just so many guys out there, even at the smaller levels, who can just play. I mean, even the APT Tour, you know, the mini tours, these guys are shooting 28, 30 under for four rounds. I mean, these, so many golfers out there that can do it. And for these people like Morikawa and Thomas and Hovland now to be able to just keep going and be consistent is what the difference maker is. And I really can't wait for this tournament this next week. Obviously, the biggest attraction will be Tiger, but the field's going to be loaded, going to be even better than we had this week. Going to have the Memorial. Obviously, it didn't seem the same because, like I said, the greens were a little slower. Muirfield is traditional for having the fastest greens besides Augusta on the tour, so I'm excited to see that. And that really bodes well for Tiger because he putts well on faster greens, and when he gets on slower greens, he doesn't do very well. That's why he hasn't had much success in the British Open. Besides the two trips to St. Andrews and Hoylake, where he hit iron everywhere, he hasn't won over there, and I think that's one of the biggest reasons. So I think that would be a reason to like Tiger this week.
Yeah, he loves the fast greens, and I'm looking forward to it again. We will have a big preview show on Wednesday. Remember, call McCray Roofing, 405-692-4000, and call Bushwood down in Chickasha, 405-224-1250. Schedule your tee time. Get down there and play Bushwood Golf and Country Club. Great week from Colin Morikawa. Great finish on the PGA Tour. An instant classic between JT and Morikawa. We are back on Wednesday. Thanks for listening once again to the 73rd Hole.